April 11, 2023 is the Juan Pedro Show.
Yes, I have it. You would like to know the answer to this. Well, I don't feel there's an answer to this. I think that it's just, it is either saying that the person who doesn't understand will understand in time,
mm-hmm.
or upon repeated listening, or it's a thing that he never will understand.
Mm.
And, that's the way it is. There are many things in life we don't understand.
Right.
And we go on anyway.
Jackson Pollock, action painter. Villain the Cooney, I'll see you later. Jasper Jones, Jasper Jones, Jasper Jones, Jasper Jones.
Pedro Show, happy Tuesday, Taco Tuesday here in Pedro. I had some at Tacos Jalisco. Start off this, you might be able to tell that I am not in man loner mode. I got Brother Matt with me, but I do because of those Skype engineers from Estonia and their way of us making a connect. Pat Irish, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Watt. Thank you so much. Great,
absolute.
Great to be here.
Fellow bass brother. And you said you were slapping the four strings this morning?
I was. It's something I do pretty much every morning when I get up. I'll cereal, a cup of coffee, and I'll hit the four strings for probably about 15, 20 minutes a day.
That's bitching. My buddy Mark Nishida told me when he'd get up, he'd jump out. He had a little drum set. Start jamming on it. Look, I should tell the people we start off the show with. It was John Coltrane getting asked by Kaname Kawachi, July 9th, 1966, getting asked about understand and not understanding music, some kinds of music. Just is. And he's got some wisdom to say there. Now, Brother Pat, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
My earliest musical recollections was I was probably about 5 years old. I'd been 1968, 1969, that time period. I had a little record player. And my grandfather owned a bar, and he had a jukebox. And they would give me the records, the 45 records that were discarded. And I remember singles like Freddie and the Dreamers, I'm Telling You Now, and I had the Beatles. Also, Yesterday, and on the flip side was Act Naturally, which was a Buck Owens song that Ringo sang.
D Boone's pop was way into Buck Owens. When I met D Boone, we were 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It was the summer of 1970. I just moved from Navy housing here, Pedro, to the what they call it. Park Western Estates. He lived in the old Park Western. And the only rock band he had heard of, remember, we're only 12, but he only knew of Creed's Clearwater Revival. Okay, so you had all these records. That's your first memories, playing those. But can you remember the first record you bought with your own money?
I do, because I had asked my mom if we could get it. I wanted to get Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey by Paul McCartney. I thought that was at the time, like a really trippy type song. And
it's kind of like two different songs I put together. I'm sorry.
It is. And I didn't know he was even a Beatle then. The Beatles had just broken up. I didn't even, because I was, seven years old, so I didn't know the Beatles went. They had just broken up when I was even aware of what was going on. But that record, I just thought was really neat. And I remember getting it. My mom bought it for me, I just played it a lot on my little record player.
Hands Across Water. I think maybe that's about like Helping in the War or something.
Yeah, I think so. That's right.
Let me. What we're talking about, thinking back. What about the first gig you saw, please, Brother Pat?
Oh well, I'll tell you the very first gig I ever saw. I went to Ireland in 1976 with my grandparents, and they would have these like Sunday night gigs after midnight. Because on Sundays, everything was like a blue law. You couldn't do anything. But like at midnight, they'd have this in the town of Claremorris where I was visiting. They had this performer named Big Tom. And when I've told people in Ireland about it, they know who he is. He's like, oh, he's like the Elvis of Ireland, they said back in 76. And it was wild because the place was packed. And I remember just getting caught up in a sea of people, and they were, it was just like, that was the first like big concert I went to, the first like arena rock concert that I remember going to. I saw Yes in 1978 at Madison Square Garden.
You know what I learned? The bass player ran that band.
Chris Squire was the only guy in that band who stayed the whole time.
No, but it was his.
Yeah. And I loved his playing because he usually played with just a pick and with a Rickenbacker. He had a really unique sound.
Let's get into making music. Okay. What about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
The one thing I didn't know, because I wasn't, I only played the bass. I didn't play any, brass or anything. But I did my senior year. I did play in the jazz rock ensemble at James I. O'Neill High School, which was in Highland Falls, New York. The drummer told me to join. He failed. He didn't graduate. And I swear he did it just to stay in the jazz rock ensemble. But he had me join in with them, and I played. I played with the jazz rock ensemble the senior year in high school.
Okay, then we're skipping ahead. I want to know the first time you got on fucking bass.
Oh, well, I'll tell you the first time I ever played bass. I was 16 years old, and I played at a Sweet 16 party at the VFW Hall in Cold Spring, New York. I was 16, and the guitar player in that band was a kid named Scott Mulvihill. He went on to be the lead guitar player in Skid Row. He's been there for many, many years. I didn't know he was in the band. He changed his name, shortened his name, but years later I found out he was in Skid Row.
I don't mean to interrupt, but you're telling me that the first time you played bass was at a gig?
The first time I played bass? Oh, the very first time I played bass. I played bass... I went to Manny's in New York City.
48th Street. You know all that shit's gone now.
I know it. I used to, because I lived 50 miles.
There was a picture of Jimmy. Picture of Jimmy on the bulkhead.
Yeah.
D-Boom bought a red knob Fender Twin there.
Wow.
Hey, you guys are up the river at Hudson.
Yeah. And I'd go down to places like this when Sam Ash was there too. That was I bought my first bass. My parents bought me my first bass in 1978 at a music store nearby in Wapishers Falls. And I'm left-handed, so what they did was they took the right-handed bass. It was a Guild B301 bass, and they switched the strings around and the bridge and everything, so I could play it that way.
Ditch it. Yeah, the nut.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to turn it over. Now, Jimmy could play a backward. He must have got used to it, right? Because he could play either way.
Yes, and I would, you know, at times I would, you know, you kind of use the tools you have, you know, and sometimes I would take a right-handed base and turn it upside, you know, turn it over the other way. But my dad was left-handed. He insisted that I do things left-handed.
Yeah, of course,
you know?
Of course. Yeah. Kay, you know, Black Flag, Dose, she's left-handed, but she thought the strong hand was supposed to be the fretting hand, not the plucking hand.
Right.
So, okay. Let's get. Once you get this bass, well, you got to tell me what kind.
Yeah, it was the Guild B301.
Okay. Did you get lessons?
No, not for that, because I took guitar lessons when I was about 8 years old. I took them for about a year. But I didn't like the guitar. I don't know. It just didn't feel right. And I would try other instruments. And then, you know, one day a childhood friend of mine named Pete Nobley had a bass. And I never knew that there was bass. I was about 13. I always thought everything was guitar. And I see this bass, four strings, big, hit notes one at a time. And I was like, I just was like, you could feel it as much as you could hear it.
Yeah.
And I fell in love immediately.
Yeah.
I just absolutely felt, I was like, that's
singing
the magic
my song,
potion.
Brother Pat.
I thought, what? That was the magic potion to music. And, you know, when I told my mom, she kind of laughed at, you know, when I said I was going to get it. And she said, all right, and this is 1977. And she said, we'll get you one for Christmas. But they didn't have enough money. So, in like, I think I still, March of 78, they bought me the Guild. And I never stopped. I just never put it down. It was just like the way it feels. It's a love affair that just will go for the rest forever, you know?
And you're saying you taught yourself. So what'd you do? Like listen to records and try to figure out the songs?
Yes. I would try and listen to, you know, the songs. At first I thought you'd hit it one at a time and I realized, wow, this is really hard. This is really difficult to do. And then you would see, you know, the guys who I admired as bass players at the time, like John Entwistle, Stanley Clark, Ron Carter, Chris Squire mentioned before, you know, they all had their own sound and they were just great musicians. And so I would watch them, you know, when I could listen to them. But I just kept hitting it and practicing. And then eventually I'd learn more. Then I'd learn more from, my peers who were, you know, musicians that I would work with and just kept at it, you know.
I'll tell you, Cat, that's good to learn off James Jamerson. Just go to youtube.com and those Motown things. Or,
yes.
Dave Alexander on those those first two Stooges albums. Oh, my God. People ask me how to learn to play bass. I said, just play along with that, man. Let Dave show you. Look, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Now, I'm not talking about after school, like graduating, but in the afternoon, like the basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get into that, like with some buddies?
Yes, and in fact, what that's pretty much all I did from like the late, like from about, I'd say 1980 to 83. I hooked up with two classmates in particular, the drummer Mike Dunlop and guitar player Pat Donnelly. And the three of us would just go into the basement and we'd jam and didn't really do much vocalizing, but we would improvise. It was just like, you know, we would just experiment and do things. Eventually, we would start to develop more songs. Pat and I would sing and start, and then individually we'd start writing songs. But we took our time with it, as you know, the term scientist rock. It felt like we were just in a lab and just working on it and discovering sounds and developing our own style.
You know. You just made me think. I only mentioned John Coltrane at the beginning of the show. After him was you doing Action Painting.
Yes. Well,
now
that,
let me ask you. We'll get into that because I still want to be in the old days. Did you do besides jamming with your buddies, which sounds bitching? It sounds like there was not as much gigs as much just playing together, right?
Right. That's true. That's right.
That's like me and D Boone. Yeah. Just getting together every day after school.
Right.
Fuck.
And we would, and, you know, maybe occasionally there'll be a keg party or something like that, or
together. Well, let me ask you this. I know you recorded this thing yourself. Were you doing your own recording in those days?
We push play and record with a cassette. You know, I never had like a multi-track till I was much older. You know, when I went to college, I went to a community college in upstate New York. They had a multi-track recorder. That was the first time where I worked in a studio, and I had a class where they an internship where they let me just record songs, and that was the first time I worked on a multi-track. And so before that, it was just you push play and record. Maybe I had a reel to reel. Sometimes I could do overdubs with that. But now I have a little Tascam and just would just record when I can. Yeah.
Ain't it such a trip how it's different now than like if we were our age then now, and everybody, right? The crap top here, the Mac purse comes with GarageBand, and you know you don't even buy it, right? It's there.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so, but still, I think you got to bring the ideas, the creativity, like the other part where you had to have a means, it's way more econo nowadays, I think. I had a cat make a whole album on an iPhone without even instruments. They used Virtual Barry. His name is Barry. Great cat. Interesting thing. I played the whole thing. Speaking of which, I played your old piece when you were working at that town.
Oh, yes, that's right, because I had given you, I remember you had played the whole thing one time. You played the entire, I did one take, I think, on it, and that's right, I did one take on the porch at my parents' house, and I sent you the cassette, and you played the whole thing, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, now, you guys have a name for this band, this trio you had?
Yeah, well, a lot of times we went by the name of Gleeb. It was G-L-E-E-B. And Gleeb, by definition, is kind of earthy, you know, just an earthy matter. And then we went by that. And we did a few gigs, you know, around the Hudson Highlands, mid-Hudson, upstate New York area, we would play.
Do you remember your first one?
What's that?
You remember your first one?
I do. I remember we played at a keg party, and I was so nervous because it was the first time we were all playing, and, you know, and everybody was just, you know, kind of hanging out, and we jammed, and it went over good, you know. We really just more improvised more than anything, but it was fun. You know, we had a good time. We, you know, and the three of us just meshed together and played. Yeah.
Look, you gave me. Well, are pointing me towards the cellophane stuff, so I want to play some here.
Okay.
Seth Thomas is my childhood friend. Playing games since the age of 10. La 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 la. A balance beam and a bouncing ball. La 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 la. We read the letters up on the wall. Steph Thomas is keeping the beat. I cut my hands and I stop my feet. A flashing light in a darkened room. A TV dinner couldn't come to. And the hush puppy shoes. La 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 la. You play the drums while I sing the blues. La 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 la. Do you know where your children are? La 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 la. Ford Falcon is my parents' car. Found bottles and a left music club. Don't tell a soul, but I just fell in love. Rolling down on a grassy hill. Feeling dizzy from thy childish thrill. TV dinner couldn't come too soon. No photos and a left-handed glove. No doubt of soul, but I just fell in love. Rolling down on a grassy hill, feeling dizzy from my childish thrill. Seth Thomas, Jack and Jill. Seth Thomas, my childhood friend. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, do it again. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, my childhood friend. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, do it again. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, my childhood friend. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, we'll do it again. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, my childhood friend. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, we'll do it again. La 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 la. Seth Thomas, my childhood friend. La la la.
We can wait. We drink our own. Road is there.
smokes a cigarette.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music. It started off with Piat Irish doing Seth Thomas. Then John DeFreeze with Static, this demo he made for the Missing Man. Myself, Tom Watts, and Raul Morales to record. It'll be on our album. Then we had a bunch of cellophane. First, We Need You, Trippin' Fields after that. Then Let's Get It Together, Just Can't Quit, Corner No Regret, Can't Stand My Retainer, finally Shallow, all by Cellophane from their only album. Then finally, Piat Irish with On a Death Tour. We've all been on those tours. No, I could relate when I was listening to you hearing this.
Oh,
so how did you get in Cellophane?
I got in cellophane because John DeVries, Mark LaFaulce, and Nick Bazance needed a bass player. The bass player they had left. And so they said, oh, let's ask Pat. And they called me, and I said yes. At the time, I was living up in Albany, New York, and I wasn't doing anything, and I'd always wanted to work with them, and the opportunity came up, and so I said, yes, I'll come down and work with you. And, you know, I worked with, you know, John and Mark in particular, I worked with them at that, you know, for 4 years, you know, cellophane, we recorded the record, and then, you know, we played a few times, played a bunch of places and stuff, but, that's how I was doing. They asked me to join them.
Can you remember the first prac, the first time you jammed? Did you have to try out?
I went to the warehouse that they were practicing in, and they'd given me a bunch of demos, so I was pretty well. I felt like I was pretty well prepared, and I didn't feel like it was a tryout because I think we'd all wanted to work together, and it felt that way. We'd always been good friends, and it just seemed like it's time for us now to be together in a band.
Can you remember the first song you played with them?
Yeah, I think we played "We Need You." We were that, and because that was one of those. That was like their opening song, and so I had learned that. I made sure I'd learned that, and I really had loved that
good
song,
move.
Too. So.
Very smart.
So I worked on that, and then we took it from there, you know, and I was learning their material.
Sure.
Then eventually John and Mark.
We'll go on, because we're at the end of the – I'm sorry, but the end of the first hour.
Go for it.
April 11, 2023 edition of the Watford Pedro Show. Special guest, Piat Irish. Hold tight for hour two. April 11, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
Heroes for the state, heroes for each other so we can be great.
Pop for Pedro show. Start off the second hour. Bunch of agitpop. First saw these cats as a Minuteman. Astronauts. Cosmonauts. And agitpop with Farm Without a Phone. Problems Respond. And then there are really no, not so many problems. Both your problems tunes there. Agitpop on the Hudson. Makes good sense. Po-Town's on the Hudson. And finally, agitpop with Loaded with Blanks. Maybe not, I think all these things is the three calm day. I remember John DeFries would always be telling me about this cat named Albert. Who would record them.
He produced, He produced, I know it, he
got
did a lot
such
of
a great sound.
Right.
Yeah, great sound, man. And it was, you know, there was no front, no jive. It was just, I liked him, but I remember him always talking about him and like a necessary thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that whole batch is from there. When did you first meet? Did you meet John DeFries before seeing Agitpop or after?
During, actually. I remember first time I ever saw John was when he played live. They were playing the Owl Hall in Vassar College. I'd say it was around 1986. I was in another band my bandmate at the time, Glenn Knickerbocker, said, "Hey, they're playing at Vassar. You want to go?" And I said, yeah, I wanted to. And they played, and it was a great show. You know, the audience was slam dancing. It was like, you know, a lot of great energy there. And, we had a lot of mutual friends in that Poughkeepsie area. And, we eventually met up not long after that, like around 86, 87. They were, I think the second record had just been released, the Back of the Plane of Jars record, and they were, and we became good friends. We just hung out a lot, and you know, John and I, it was music, we a lot of different things we were into and stuff. So it was during the Agitpop times that I hung out with them. Yeah,
and you were a Poughkeepsie guy then, or still Albany?
At the time I was in Poughkeepsie because I was going to school up there.
Okay.
I got my bachelor's in communications at Marist College. So I was finishing up school and I was also playing too. But those guys they were out all the time. They were touring, they were recording, they were just full on with it.
And with your band thing, you just kind of stayed in New York, or did you do any of the touring thing?
Not much, because I get in a band and usually they didn't stay together. You know, it's just guys would be going off to college, things like that. So, you know, I just wasn't able to hook up with a group of people where I said, all right, we'll make a record, we're going to go on tour. So it never happened. Even though I was playing all the time, I just never really was able to hook up until I hooked up with the guys when they were Cellophane, where it was like, okay, that was a group that we recorded. We would tour and do things like that. Yeah.
So, like Mark's the same, but Rick is gone.
Yeah. You know, Mark with the band, you know, we have this core band Saturday night for the memorial, and Mark's going to play the drums. He's, you know, he's really been kind of the leader of everything, kind of getting us together to do it. Rick is around, you know, hopefully, you know, I hope he's there on Saturday. I know he requested a couple of songs, and he's been more reserved these days. But he's a great guy. I love Rick. He's a great guy.
Did either Mark or Rick, one of them cats live in Seattle for a while?
Well, Mark is in Seattle.
Okay.
Yes, he lives there now.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And he's flying to the gig in Kingston. And we're getting, I haven't seen him in 25 years. We've been doing the Zoom thing together and stuff, but we haven't played music, you know, and a scene of like together in quarter of a century now. But we're going to do it this weekend and really look forward to it.
Well, you should tell people the name of the fucking pad.
Yes, we're going to play at the Old Dutch Church in Kingston, New York. And it's in 272, Wall Street and Kingston, and they have had gigs
the
there.
Day,
I know
the day.
Played there like 4 months
brother
ago.
Brother Pat, you got to tell the date.
The date is April 15th,
okay.
Saturday, April 15th, and it's just a few days away from our recording here.
Yeah, right. What do you mean record? Yeah. Oh, you mean doing the show or
doing the show? Yes.
I thought you doing and Mark were going to record.
No, not yet.
Let's play some more agitpop, okay? This is after Albert. This is the twin tone.
Yes.
We'll be right back. drop and roll. Stop, drop and roll. Stop, drop and roll.
Understand that, yeah. Thank you.
from Pedro Show. That chunk of music start off more agitpop, all agitpop, but this is from after the 3Com stuff when they're with the Twin Tone getting up to go down. Started it off agitpop, kick back the hands, and then it won't be long now. Agitpop, stop, drop, and roll. Agitpop, forget me not. And then some live stuff. This is in 1988, them doing a Cream song, Badge. Okay. I think it was on Goodbye Cream. And then this live thing from 2007. I guess they did a reunion gig and they're kind of playing acoustic. This is called Top of the Stairs. 2007. Right. Yeah, I didn't know about that, but that was beautiful.
That might have been when they went to Switzerland. They a friend of theirs named Arthur Clay, I think, had invited them out, and they had played out and they did like some shows out there, and they recorded it. So if I'm not mistaken, that might be where that's from.
But there was no agitpop. Since what, 1990 or 89?
They got back together after Cellophane broke up in 1996. They reformed and recorded an album's worth of music. And I've heard a few of the tracks. They're really great. One song called Dead Inside that's on you can find it on YouTube. They made a video of, and great. We're going to play it that night also. John's daughter Emily's going to sing that song, and great. You know, they were great. I love the chemistry with that band.
I had no idea. And here's something I did find, and I'm going to play right now, Brother Pat. Mm-hmm. I guess Vic Chesnutt had come to town in March. And John recorded with them three songs. I want to play those now.
Okay, great.
Not a leg break, you laugh out loud and lonesome in your cabin cruiser on the cross county track. Your brain feels like a fiddle, a brittle, fragile vessel. Pull off onto the shoulder by the waterworks. Get it. On demand, like from where?
that the birds scrape the ground. Even the loneliest old ladies get social calls where they dine and talk about their savior and the grassroots effort to incorporate Alexei, a smiling mayor. Newtown, Americana. Newtown, rookie police. Newtown, industries are wanted for the local employees. And a little bitty baby draws a nice clean breath from over his beaming mama's shoulder. He's staring at the worldly wonders that stretch just as far as he can see. But he'll stop staring when he's older. Social calls where they dine and talk about their saviors and the grassroots effort to incorporate Alexei, smiling mayor. Newtown. Well, I'm sorry for my lack of communication. But as I'm staring out this fifth floor window, it seems like the least amount of communication, the better. There's a bloody effigy on my wall, and a complimentary carnation is falling apart. See you around. must admit, I'm flattered by your consecration. It's a mind-numbing, spine-chilling, but nevertheless heartwarming gesture. Fluorescent light, Dunkin' Donuts. But I ain't got time for the niceties. Or rather, I was never, never fond of the niceties. I'll see you.
Thank you.
Bought for Pedro Show. Chuck, the music's all Vic Chestnut, and it's all got John DeFries and Mark too. Yeah. First it was Giant Sands. Remember how Galvin had a band called Giant Sands. And then New Town. And finally, See You Around. And you got something to add. You got to meet Vic Chestnut. He came and saw a Cellophane show. Because this is around the time of Cellophane, people. Like, what would you say, mid-90s?
Yeah, 96. He did. He came. And as it turned out, it was our last show. We were actually, that was the last gig we played together. He came to that show. He was there that night. And I met him there. And it was really intense. He was a sweet guy, you know. It was great to meet Vic, and he was with, you know, Mark and John, and he was there, and that was quite a night. Yeah, it was great.
And where was that, Pat?
That was at the Rhinecliff Hotel. That had a lot of concerts up there. It was like just a, you know, just a dive bar, but it had this long room and then we'd pack them in with like a lot of Bard College students and people from that area. And they just come in and yeah, we played that night. Yeah. We were there. We used to play there like every other month at that venue.
Did John go to Bard? I remember playing with those guys. Maybe it was a gig.
They were hooked up with that, you know. They were always hooked up with that, like, Bard College, Vassar College type crowd. And there was especially in those days, like in the early to mid 80s. And you know, because you would play that circuit, you know, it'd have, you know, so many great bands just come in and play. And they networked really well, with all those, you know, because I think Minutemen played, and maybe would actually pop there. At Bard?
Yeah. D Boone gave a little, he used the blackboard to give a little talk on what was going down in Central America. And so, like, I've seen him on a Super 8, right? There's no sound, but you can, well, I've heard audio though too, and he's like explaining, like before we went on or in between songs. It was great. He's beautiful.
Yeah.
D Boone knew how to work the room. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. April 11th, 2023, edition WAP Pedro Show, special guest Pat Irish. Hold tight for hour three. April 11th, 2023, it's the third hour of the WAP for Pedro Show.
I'm That's the way it goes.
Boudreau Show started off the third hour with Cellophane doing a Minutemen song, More Joy. This was for that Our Band Could Be Your Life compilation Mike Hogan put out many moons ago. Then, myself with Frank Black and Jay Maskus doing a song that John Freese wrote for me called The Big Bang Theory. Great tune. And just, yeah, Brother Pat, I was asking you about Postcard. I thought it was a senior moment, but
no.
Thank you for validating that.
Well, because that was the band that was, they had that band right after Agitpop, and that was,
right.
The lineup on that was Nick Bazanz was on guitar, and Mark Hawksley was on bass, and they demoed Big Bang Theory. I know John had written that, and it told me he'd written that for you. You know, he wanted you to have that, and that's how I learned it. I learned it from the Postcard demo, so I got that bass part from there.
Yeah, because mine's a little different. I even changed some of the words. Well, I put myself in the song.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because that was great because and that night when Nick Bazanz sings it, he said that night he's going to say John DeVries. You know, you go call after John that
hard.
Night. And I think originally, if I'm not mistaken, I think John said something like Mr. Beatle. I think that's what he something like that. But it was funny. You know, but I always heard, you know, in fact, because we didn't have a copy and we wanted to do Big Bang Theory, we listened to your version. You know, we that's what we. You know, I was listening to your bass parts to get the chords and stuff for the show that we're going to be doing Saturday night, you know.
Yeah, now, some trippy stuff I didn't really know, but I was searching around, something called Grand Mall. John DeVries helped out with this tune, A Whole Lot of Nothing. And then this, I remember him mentioning this cat to me, Grasshopper.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And the Golden Crickets, and it was called Nickel and a Lemon. But I remember him talking about, and I actually once played with Mercury Rev, but I think it was an early version when they had the weird dude who just jumped around.
Oh, yeah, David Baker. I think it was David Baker.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, because when I heard people told me, I didn't even know it was them, and it didn't sound like the band I played with. It was a Buffalo gig, I remember.
Oh, yeah, that's where they were from. That's
okay.
Right.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, probably the last thing you told me, John DeVries recorded with you a demo for a tune called Sludge.
That's right. He after he did the song Static, which he said he wanted to give to you.
Yeah.
He laid down this just guitar track. When I listened back to it, the other day, there were no vocals. I thought maybe there were, but he had just put the guitar track down. I think he was going to put the vocals down later. That's something we were going to do. So I never did get the lyrics down, but I think he did a couple of takes. So I know he had this guitar part that he wanted to get down, so we recorded it. That's right.
Now, did you guys have plan just to record that one song?
I think he wanted to rework. I think he wanted to develop the lyrics more. He tended a lot of times to do the music first. He liked he would write lyrics, but I always felt he always when he'd bring a song in, he always liked to focus on the music, and then he'd go with the lyrics later, and that was kind of the approach he was doing with, I think, Sludge. He was still developing, whereas Static, that was much more, that was, I think, was already pretty
well,
much set.
What about in the bigger picture? Was he going to make a collection of songs? Were you guys going to record an album?
We wanted to, and I know he, you know, he had a few months before he died, you know, he had texted me and had wanted to get together. He wanted to, you know, he says, oh, I want you to play bass. I want to record. He was trying to get together with others and try and set something up. And if not, maybe at the very least, we could have like just made demos with my Tascam. But I know he wanted to. He was trying to. He was trying to hook up with others to get some kind of deal and to keep going. But
he was writing me emails about doing gigs acoustic.
Mm-hmm. Right, because he was playing solo a lot. You know, it was like, you know, he had one of the last gigs he did, maybe about a year ago, he played a gig up in Portland, Maine. I remember seeing that he got a gig up there and was playing. That might have been the last gig one of the last gigs
You know
gigs
what?
He
because
did.
I was touring, I was helping Mike Baghetta with MSSV. And I think I heard about the – he might have played the same pad I did even.
Yeah, the tiki – was it the tiki?
Yeah, something like that. It used to be maybe a tan and salon thing that got repurposed.
Right. And the guy – I knew that when – because I saw a picture posted with John, and I think that might have been the O at the club. And he loved, you know, he's a big fan of John's and stuff. So
Okay. So he was doing that, but he also had ideas about making a rock band again.
Yeah, I mean, we would always – talk about getting together. You know, he definitely would. And I know he, you know, we had the last gig we ever did together back in 2019. He, you know, I did the rock op, my rock op at the front desk. You know, I had Nick Bazance on guitar and Mike Worsa, drummer. And John opened up. John played solo. He played solo, and at the end of it, the last song we did was on – the last song I ever played with John, Nick and Mike and I, we played On the Hudson, and he sang it, and it was the last thing we ever did. I remember playing the – I had the Wildflower that night, and we were having at it.
Okay. This is also funny, because the cellophane CD people – now, you couldn't do this on vinyl. But the cellophane CD people had a hidden track, and we're going to play it now. And it's a doozy, so relax, kick back, and trip on this. Thank you. Watt for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. Fuck, I threw the paper away too early. Yeah, that's just one tune in that chunk of music, people. Extra Special Birds, it's called. That's Cellophane. The one and only album they made. And how long did it take to make that record?
You know, I think, like, you know, I remember we recorded, I think, the winter of 92.
Yeah.
Into 93. So it was about, I think the actual recording of it was probably about two or 3 months. No more than that. But I think we got everything done in about 2 or 3 months. It was the most pre-planned. It was like making a Hollywood movie. I mean, John and Mark in particular, they really had every measure, every note accountable for that. It was a lot of work. I had a lot of guests.
Speaking of movies, Andy Warhol made some movies.
Yes.
And you're telling me off air there, John DeFries was a fan.
He loved Andy. Yeah, he loved Andy. In fact, a good friend of ours for many years was a guy named Billy Name, who was part of that Warhol factor. Yeah, he lived up in Poughkeepsie, and he was a really good friend. And
you know what? A cat that John told me about too was Sterling from the Velvet Underground.
Yes, he was living up around there and was doing some work. Poughkeepsie Woodstock area. That's right. Yeah.
He was like, I think he was before that tugboat cat in fucking Houston or something.
Yeah, you're right. And then right around that time too, the Velvet Underground got back together again.
That's right.
For one
last
time.
Little bit. And, so, cause we were saying, you know, that last tune, like, when is it going to kick in? And like watching an Andy Warhol movie. And so, John, he might have appreciated that comment.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about him lately. I didn't know about stuff like Grandma and Grasshopper. I remember him mentioning this guy named Grasshopper.
Yeah. Him and John Donahue are really the main people for the group Mercury Rev, and they've and they're still together, and Grandma was a group that John worked with. I remember the gentleman's name is Bill Witten. He was in a band before called St. Johnny. They were all kind of hooked up in that similar circle.
That's a trip. Well, he's got the music here, and you know, especially the agitpop, and it's trippy how he evolved into Cellophane, because you can tell him and Mark played together, man, and then you were right there for them. Brother Pat, thank you so much.
I'm very fortunate to have been able to work with them. That they were, you know, that the time came where it was like, let's get together, and we made that record, and we played a bunch of shows, and we were always, no matter what, we were always great friends with one another. And you know, for every, you know, people, there are people from all over the world coming to this event for John. There's been no wake, there's been no funeral yet. This is the first time anything we're having together, and there's a lot of love, and a lot of people are getting together, and it shows him, you know, all of us, you, me, everybody, how important he was. If you knew him, you loved him.
Yeah.
You really did.
Yeah, thank you for that, Brother Pat, truly. Thank you.
Sure, Brother Watt.
Yeah. Big love to you, Brother John DeFries. Great cat. I remember the first thing I can go back in my memory is that smile. Beautiful
smile, and someone who, you know, he was so engaging. He talked to you,
well, we keep on keeping on. People, April 11th, 2023 edition WAP for Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.